Before I begin today's episode, I will briefly recap last week's, in which I covered the first half of Diana Spencer's life. She was born near Sandringham, England, the third daughter to parents Edward John Spencer and Frances Ruth Burke Roche, both of which had come from prominent British families. For her early education, she was homeschooled, but eventually moved to Riddlesworth Hall, then Westheath. She was shy but well-liked and won her school's award for giving the maximum help to her school and peers. But she left Westheath in 1977 to attend finishing school in Switzerland. This wasn't a real school, but at least she learned how to dressmake. But like all the schools before, she didn't last long, and the next year she moved into a flat alone in London. Here, at the age of 17, she worked as a babysitter and a kindergarten assistant. She had no education, not even a high school diploma. Her father didn't take much interest in women's education. However, before she moved to London, on a break from school in 1977, she had met her would-be husband, Prince Charles, and they started dating. By the end of the 1980s, Charles had been facing quite a lot of public pressure to find a nice girl to be his wife, and Diana fit the bill, despite the fact that she was 13 years his junior, despite the fact they had only gone on 13 dates, despite the fact that he was in love with an ex-flame named Camilla Parker Bowles. Now, if you were me or someone sane, you might see these things as, I don't know, red flags, but Charles didn't, so they got engaged in 1981 with a super absurdly big ring. Then they got married, went on their honeymoon and stuff, blah blah blah, but in an interview to mark their engagement, they were asked if they were in love. Diana responded with, "Yes, of course," and Charles muttered, "Whatever love means." If this doesn't sum up the Diana Charles, quote, love story, I don't know what would. The press, though, were obsessed with them, painting them as the perfect fairy tale couple. The story was the reserved garden-loving prince and the shy young woman with an interest in fashion and pop culture. Naturally, when you marry a prince, the general public becomes pretty interested in you as a public figure, but Diana got really the worst of that. But we'll dive into her relationship with the press further in this episode. So, shall we get into it? 1980 could probably be called Diana's decade. It was hard to exist and not be bombarded with her. She covered every tabloid, was the subject of intense public scrutiny, but at the same time, it seemed that nothing could make her unlikable in the eyes of the public. Hello, and welcome to the Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I'm here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want, and today, I want to talk about Diana, Princess of Wales. Again. Okay, welcome everyone. I don't have any new disclaimers to make today, but I do want to briefly recap a few from last week. I will not be discussing, or even identifying, Diana's struggles with bulimia. If you would like the reason for that, please go to the other episode. I hope that most of you have listened to that, so I don't feel a need to reiterate it, but it's there if you want a reminder. One more thing, I'm also going to be issuing a content warning again. Y'all know the drill. Today I will be discussing difficult topics like depression, struggles with mental health, bullying, and death. I understand that it can be difficult to hear this kind of thing and actually listen, but if you know these topics are triggering or difficult for you, please, please, please just turn it off. I don't know how effective this would be, but to the person who knows this is hard for them and is still listening, I'm talking about you. Okay. Bye! So, they're most definitely gone now. Shall we get started? Today, we are going to be picking up where we left off, which is Diana and Charles's unreasonably large honeymoon, in which they probably didn't even look at each other once. So, it's 1981. Also, if you think my voice sounds weird, it's because I'm tired and I'm recording this at 5 in the morning, just so people know. Following her marriage to Charles, she became very involved in the duties of the royal family. In fact, her first tour with Charles wasn't even a year after they were married, in November of 1981. However, to be fair, it was a 3-day visit to Wales, so I don't really think it can be considered hard. Okay, but I have a question about these tours that the royal family does. From my perspective, this seems to be the only real thing that they do. And like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Charles and Diana were just doing tours. And maybe for the Queen, you have other jobs, but that kind of just sounds like a load of bullshit. Like, you're telling me that these famous people that are only famous because they, what, were born to some rando that we for no reason have decided is the, quote, Queen of England? And the only thing that they do in order to be super rich is travel and meet people that love them? Like, what? I honestly cannot hear another fucking royal complain about their life. Like, if you're Meghan Markle or Diana, I have all the time in the world to listen to you. But Harry? Fuck off, man. Like, I don't care if you feel trapped. Acknowledge your privilege. When I questioned the tours, I didn't think it would end there, but yeah, back to all the tours Diana was doing. Her next big tour was in 1983, where she accompanied the Prince of Wales, or as I like to call him, Poo Poo Head. They toured Australia and New Zealand with a special companion, baby Prince William, who was very little, considering he was born on June 21st of the prior year. His full name was Prince William Arthur Philip Louis. And like, does he need to have that many names? And if you're gonna give your child that many names, like if you're gonna do it, at least make one of them cool. Their second son, Prince Harry, was born 2 years later, on September 15th of 1984. And that was probably the last time they had sex. Prince Harry's full name was Henry Charles Albert David. And all the things I said about William's name still stand. Their next tour was in 1985, with both William and Harry. They would go on many other tours throughout the course of their marriage, including Brazil, India, Canada, sup homies, Nigeria, Cameroon, Indonesia, Spain, Italy, France, Portugal, and Japan. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel like tours are really that common for the members of the royal family anymore, which I think makes sense. Maybe it's just COVID. Diana also went on a few tours without her hubby, for example. Her first overseas visit alone was in 1982, in which she represented the Queen at the state funeral of Princess Grace of Monaco. Her first tour alone was 2 years later, when she traveled to Norway to attend a performance of Carmen by the London City Ballet. Carmen? I do not know how to pronounce that. But guys, I cannot believe that that was her job. One of the things that Diana was really well known for was her charisma, but I feel like that's the wrong word. It was more like approachability. She was welcoming and inclusive, and her subjects all around the world would rave about her kindness overseas. She was also really well known for her love of children and made it a habit to attend children's hospitals wherever she visited. She was great with children, and to this day, it's one of the things that she's most remembered for. Something I find cute is that she used to wear large pieces of jewelry so that kids could play with it, and she would never wear gloves so that whoever shook her hands was touching her real skin. All of us chilling in 2021 are drooling at that. Another example of her love of children is how she raised her own. At the time, it was customary to allow royal children to be raised by nannies and midwives, but Diana was not having this. She was super hands-on, and was with them as much as possible. Another thing that Diana was known for was her divergence from traditional royal values, and she frequently swore, laughed, and used crude language in public. And her values is what she passed down to her children. In fact, in 2017, William and Harry credited her with teaching them how to not suppress their emotions, which I find not shocking. Like, it definitely wasn't Charles. But here's the thing, if you're like me, you're probably not really that interested in all her overseas tours. Well, to be fair, I'm actually kind of interested because I really like politics, but there are many more interesting things about Diana. For example, one of the things I would say she's most well known for is her involvement and support of a large number of charities. She was an outspoken advocate for the homeless, people living with AIDS, and children in need, naturally. She started many charities and supported many pre-existing ones. She spoke for tons, and honestly, her work in public service is likely unparalleled throughout history, or at least modern history. And overall, she was the president and patron of over 100 charities. But all the while, she was struggling in her marriage, and it was putting a lot of strain on her own happiness. And she later discussed her severe depression during this period, and told the public about how it even got as bad as attempting suicide. Much later in life, following her divorce, she secretly collaborated with Andrew Morton for his unofficial biography of her, where she admitted that being trapped in what was essentially an arranged marriage had driven her to attempt suicide. You have to imagine that this would be the case, though. She was trapped in a palace that didn't really communicate, did little to protect her from the ruthless British tabloids. Her husband resented and ignored her, jealous of all the attention she got and how it overshadowed him, the man that would be king, whilst all the while having an affair, physically and emotionally, with Camilla Parker Bowles. He never loved her. He only ever used her, and couldn't even be bothered to keep up the act. After the marriage, he threw her out to dry, and things got so hard for her that she attempted suicide. I like history because of the perspective it offers me to look at current events with. For example, after learning about the Atlantic slave trade, I will never look at modern racism the same, and honestly, the world. It's the same for every episode, and right now, probably like you, I can't help thinking about Meghan, because their two situations are eerily similar, and yet 40 years apart. I would love to stay on this topic, but I have a lot to cover, so we gotta keep moving. I hope by now you have a sense of what Diana was doing in the 80s, raising her sons, cheating on her husband, working with over 100 charities, you know, the usual. And this is all good and well, but the juicier stuff happened in the 90s, so let's move on. In 1992, Diana and Prince Charles separated, and it was announced by the British Prime Minister John Major, who read a statement from the royal family to the House of Commons. Now, I assume I don't need to tell most of you this, but back in the 1990s, separation and divorce was received very differently, and we might notice that Diana and Charles should have gotten a divorce, well, like, before they got married, but regardless, I think it's important for me to put in perspective that this cultural barrier was a very difficult hurdle for them, and had it not been there, they likely would have separated years ago. In 1993, a year following this announcement, she also announced that she would be reducing her public life in order to combine a meaningful public role with a more private life. And in the coming years, she would go on to resign most of her charities and other patronages, as well as relinquishing all her service appointments with military units. However, she remained president of a few charities, for example, Centerpoint, a charity for the homeless, and the National AIDS Trust. In 1996, the divorce was finalized, but something to note is what this did to Diana's titles, because she actually retained most of her royal status, which I didn't know. After the split, she continued to hold on to the title Princess of Wales, and she was still able to live at Kensington Palace. However, she did give up the title Her Royal Highness and any claim she had to the British throne whatsoever. She also continued to attend royal engagements and fulfill duties for the British throne. However, following her divorce, she began to develop and pursue some of her own interests as well. But no matter what, she remained favorable in the public eye, and her popularity never seemed to dwindle. In 1995, she had met a heart surgeon who she quickly started dating following the divorce, and you have to imagine that the tabloids were always very interested in her new relationships. Because Diana's a baddie, she took the divorce as an opportunity to call out the royal family, and like I briefly mentioned, secretly collaborated with Andrew Morton's unofficial biography, where she admitted that being trapped in the marriage had been so detrimental to her mental health, and that it drove her to attempting suicide. But Charles's friend and fans fought back. Though to be fair, he didn't have many of either of those, so it wasn't like he was a very formidable army. When Diana publicly accused him of infidelity in an interview, a friend of Charles named Nicholas Somoze, who, by the way, is a conservative member of parliament and the grandson of Winston Churchill, fought back saying that Diana was in the advanced stages of paranoia, and that the very admission of her mental health struggles meant that her claims were unreliable. And just so that you know, Somes also once said, "I'm a believer in the stiff upper lip and having a cold shower and getting on with things," and then elaborated at nobody's request, saying that he would be ashamed if any members of his family seek psychiatric help. And I have one question for you, Somes. Do you need psychiatric help? I feel like you do. But hey, Charles and Somes are still friends, so... Now, you've probably noticed that we're getting rather close to Diana's fatal car crash. So now, it's 1997, and let me introduce one final character, Egyptian film producer and playboy Dodi Fayed, who Diana started dating in 1997. The two had met over 10 years ago at a polo match when Fade and Charles played on opposing teams, and then reconnected over the summer of 1997, openly dating, spending time together in Sardinia, the south of France, and Paris. They were like heroin for the tabloids. They couldn't get enough of the couple, and it was frequently reported that certain members of the royal family and former prime minister didn't approve of their relationship. Why, you ask? Because Dodi Fade wasn't white. However, this relationship, according to Diana, wasn't even that serious. She confided in her butler, Paul Burrell, that the relationship was a, quote, rebound from her prior relationship with heart surgeon Hasnat Khan. Diana's last ever engagement in Britain was when she visited Northwick Park Hospital, London, specifically the Children's and Accidents and Emergencies Unit. In the years leading up to her death, she had been an active advocate against the use and manufacturing of landmines, and in the weeks leading up to her death, she had been traveling around the world speaking on this topic. Her last ever engagement was on the 10th of August when she visited the landmine project in Trenek, Strajeep, and Zenezica. I'm very, very sorry for my botched pronunciation. But following her travels, she landed in France for a much-needed break. On Sunday, August 31st of 1997, she was involved in a car accident. It was early in the morning, coming home from a night out, and while being chased by the paparazzi, they tried to escape, leading to some reckless driving. There were three people in the car, Diana, Dodi Fade, and the driver. While the vehicle was traveling at high speed and crossing the Place de l'Homme underpass in central Paris, they reportedly were confronted with a bright light, blinding them and causing them to crash. Dodi Fade and the driver were pronounced dead at the scene. Diana initially survived the car crash, but succumbed to her injuries at a Paris hospital a mere few hours later. She was 36 years old. News of her death shocked the world. In a statement made by Queen Elizabeth following her death, she said, "No one who knew Diana will ever forget her. Millions of others who never met her but felt they knew her will remember her. I, for one, believe there are lessons to be drawn from her life and from the extraordinary and moving reaction to her death. I share in your determination to cherish her memory." It has become customary to blame paparazzi for her death, but in 1999, investigative reports were released, revealing that the driver was at fault because he was driving at a high speed whilst under the influence of alcohol and antidepressants. This reveal caused all the charges to be dropped against the photographer. However, I have no interest and I am in no position to place any blame or make any conclusions about who is at fault for Diana's death. The world and the royal family quickly went into mourning, and on December 6th, Diana's lavish funeral took place. Thousands of people packed into the streets to watch, and it's estimated that 2.5 billion people tuned in on TV to watch the ceremony all over the world. Now, when I decided to do a podcast on Diana, I worried I wouldn't even have enough information to do one full episode. And in writing this one, I considered adding a third because there's so much stuff I left out and so many details I could have dived into had I had more time. For example, I didn't talk about her fashion at all, which might seem irrelevant, but was not at all, and I wish I could have dived into it more. I made this a two-parter very last minute when writing the episode last week, I realized I had a lot more to say and not enough time to do so. And even doing it this week, I feel like I've left out so much, and I feel like I didn't really devote enough time to anything, so I apologize for that. I'm gonna work on planning my time better in the future. One more thing I want to add is about the conspiracies surrounding Diana's death. One of the first ways that I was actually introduced to Diana was through some of these, and I'm going to be honest, I do find some of them quite convincing, and considering the whole Meghan situation, I don't know, I do think there is something suspicious going on in the royal family, but this is history and not conspiracy, so I have no interest in diving into them right now. I actually feel pretty bummed right now because there was a lot more I wanted to talk about. Diana's a really incredible figure, and I wish I had more time to reflect on her, but I'm running out of time, and my ability to write and finish this episode in time is also limited, so I'm going to stop here and allow you to reflect on it yourself. But I want to end by saying that Diana deserved so much better than what she got, and when you look at her life as a whole, it's actually quite tragic. She was used and abused by the royal family, and then when they tired of her, she was thrown to the dogs. But then they're also what brought about her death. Indirectly, I'm not talking about the conspiracy, and that is just so tragic. Okay, I used 3 main sources for this. One was a CNN article. This was great for getting the dirtier details, the stuff the British government wasn't going to reveal. And I say this because another one of my sources was the British government's profile on her. This was a great source for, like, public engagement and really specific details about her childhood, but also it was clearly censored, which made it interesting to read. And then one of them was from biography.com, and this was perfect for when my 2 other sources were giving me contrasting information, which they often did. If you want to do more research, I would recommend reading the CNN and British government's one side by side for some rather interesting parallels. Thank you so much. I'm so sorry that this episode wasn't longer and that I didn't have time to share more of my thoughts on her, but I'm also sorry that I left out the more interesting details like her fashion, but I did try to include the most important details to her life. But thank you so much for listening. I will probably be back next week, although I will say I'm gonna be driving all week, so I will be writing an episode. It's more a question of whether I'll be able to record it. Hopefully I will, but if not, I'll just probably do like 2 episodes next week or whenever, because I'm gonna still write one. I don't know what I'm doing yet. I think it might be something with Greek mythology again, because I still have that on my mind. But thank you so much. I love you. Bye.